Welcome to this edition of Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'm your host for this episode, Dr. Sarah Wise from Atlanta, Georgia. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Amarbir Gill from the University of Michigan. We'll be discussing the recent IFAR publication, Healthcare Disparities and Chronic Rhinosinusitis, Does Neighborhood Disadvantage Impact Outcomes in Sinonasal Disease? Welcome, and congratulations to you and your co-authors on the paper.
Thanks, Sarah. Super excited to be here. Appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. So let's get started. One of the most significant aspects of the rhinology practice involves taking care of patients with chronic rhinosinusitis with and without nasal polyps. This is a condition that really significantly impacts patient quality of life and also has numerous other medical comorbidities that may be associated with it. We typically think of chronic rhinosinusitis as a condition that's treated medically, although certainly some patients will end up having sinus surgery. In recent years, for many health conditions, we've seen important work in the realm of health disparities and social determinants of health. And some of these results have been really striking and have really been a call for change. It highlights the need for practitioners and the healthcare system to pay closer attention to how these social determinants affect things like patient presentation, access to care, ability to adhere to recommended treatment regimens, and importantly, the outcomes for our patients. So with this in mind, can you discuss a bit about your overall aim in performing this work? What were the objectives of this study, and what were you all trying to accomplish?
Absolutely. You know, before I get into that, Sarah, I'd say a lot of what you just said was a big sort of motivation for the study. And ultimately, as you alluded, other sort of parts of medicine have incorporated and have analyzed the impact of social determinants of health on some of these aspects. But we felt like within rhinology, specifically as it applies to chronic rhinosinusitis, there are some holes that need to be filled. And with that in mind, we wanted to take a more comprehensive approach to understanding the impact of socioeconomic status as one of those parts of social determinants of health, the impact of socioeconomic status on baseline disease quality of life, disease severity, and then outcomes. Some of the prior studies that have looked at this have focused on things like race, ethnicity, insurance status as sort of surrogate measures of socioeconomic status. But this idea, SES, it's a little bit more complex than that, and it incorporates several sort of themes that go beyond sort of just those aspects. And so that's where we wanted to incorporate this index called the Area Deprivation Index, which uses 17 different measures under four unique themes to encapsulate sort of neighborhood disadvantage. And those themes include education, income, as well as sort of the housing access. And so when we combine these things together, we get a better idea of how socioeconomic status sort of at its fullest could be impacting our patients. Also, this is a validated index that's now being used sort of at the highest level to also inform sort of policy around how to sort of divvy up care, how to even impact payment. So I think it impacts a lot of us, not only our patients, but us as providers from a bunch of different angles.
Yeah, that's great. I was actually interested in talking a little bit more about this Area Deprivation Index as well. I think, as you indicated, it captures quite a bit more than just, you know, someone's postal code or zip code or the county that they live in or their, you know, demographic information. So what other type of sort of health outcome studies have used this particular measure? Where has it been impactful in other areas of medicine?
Yeah, great question. So some of the original studies, some of the studies where it's been most impactful has been looking at sort of general surgery cases and outcomes in general surgery. And they've demonstrated sort of this strong correlation with people that are from more disadvantaged neighborhoods as ending up with worse outcomes, whether that be things like readmission rates, complications, those sorts of things. But beyond that, it's also been evaluated in sort of the critically ill population, people with sepsis, and then asthma. So for us, you know, oftentimes things that happen in the asthma literature is something we pay attention to with the sort of unified airway hypothesis, knowing that a lot of the triggers that affect asthma also end up sort of affecting CRS. And perhaps some of the things from a sociodemographic aspect that affect asthma may also be relevant for us. And then there's cancer. So cancer has also been studied pretty heavily with sort of this correlation with ADI. And I think one of the sort of more interesting aspects beyond sort of outcomes has been a few systematic reviews that have demonstrated that ADI is a good predictor of sort of cost of care as well. And so what these sort of systematic reviews have shown is that when you have patients that are from more disadvantaged neighborhoods, the sort of overall associated costs, including like rehospitalizations and et cetera, end up being a lot higher. And so I think that's gotten the attention of some of the sort of the policymakers as well.
Absolutely. I think these are very interesting aspects. And you know, you've mentioned some critically important diseases, cancer and asthma and general surgery conditions that, you know, certainly some of those we see in our rhinology patients as well. So tell me a little bit more about the methods of the study. You know, how was this area deprivation index applied to patients with chronic rhinosinusitis?
You know, we're fortunate to be a part of this multi-institutional cohort where there's been prospectively collected data for a fairly large cohort sort of within the CRS research field. And we wanted to sort of optimize our design to get the most out of this cohort. And so one way in which we did that here was the ADI, you can add publicly available data and it utilizes a 9-digit zip code. And so being able to access 9-digit zip codes on our patients, we were able to sort of retrospectively evaluate at the time of enrollment where their zip code was and utilize that at the 9-digit level, so more specific than sort of the 5-digit level, to sort of come up with these ADI rankings. And we examined the national ADI rank. So that's from scale 1 to 100, with 100 being the most disadvantaged neighborhoods. But it also you can also sort of divide it and look at it at the state level as well. And as I mentioned, it's been taken from its original sort of creation, I think around 2003, and adapted at the University of Wisconsin, validated, and sort of that's what we look at now. And the most updated version of it that we utilize here was from 2020. So that's what we referenced when we were looking at our zip codes. And it's also important to keep in mind the ADI looks at sort of the census level, so sort of census blocks, when it's incorporating its outcomes, which is kind of an interesting way to do it because housing, as I mentioned, is a part of the ADI, which is good, but it may also be a potential limitation, as some have argued. For example, if you have certain areas like New York City, this has become a little bit of a problem. So the census blocks are such that you could have, you know, the three other domains indicating a sort of deprived neighborhood, but then incorporating some of the housing, all of a sudden it sort of takes away some of that deprivation, just the way that the census blocks are laid out. So I think that's just something, as we interpret all results related to ADI, that we should consider. So once, you know, we had a cohort of 642 patients, we were able to assign ADI rank, and then we looked at their baseline SNOT 22 scores, baseline SF60, sort of general health, quality of life, and then a lot of our usual sort of measures of disease severity, like our lung Kennedy nasal endoscopy, lung KCT scores, and then also looked at nasal polyposis, aspirin sensitivity, asthma, comorbidities. And then we were able to sort of analyze those data to find some of our correlation.
Excellent. And what did you find in your analyses? If you can describe some of the major or key findings of the study for CRS patients.
Yeah, I think if I had to sort of really distill it into two sort of main take-home points, they would be the following. First, the ADI, the national ADI rank, was significantly correlated with worse baseline and general quality of life. So people that were from more deprived neighborhoods tended to present with worse SNOT 22 and SF60 scores. In addition to that, the more deprived neighborhoods were also correlated with having a history of prior sinus surgery. And the second sort of take-home point, I think, is that despite these correlations sort of with baseline quality of life, with disease severity, ultimately everyone still got benefit and improved significantly after they were managed. So that's both with continued appropriate medical therapy and or endoscopic sinus surgery. So the sort of neighborhood deprivation status didn't seem to affect the likelihood to get an improvement from managing the disease.
I think that's a particularly critical finding that, you know, the patients, it seems, as you were describing, regardless of kind of their, you know, particularly worse or perhaps not so bad baseline, they all got better, or in general, the cohort got better.
Yeah.
I think that is, you know, something that I think is encouraging to us as rhinologists, as we take care of these patients, but very important to recognize that certain patients that may have particular social determinants or, you know, live in areas that are more deprived may have maybe starting from a lower quality of life or, you know, from a lower sort of baseline status.
Absolutely. And sort of one other interesting point was that the patients who had sort of this aspirin sensitivity component, which is, you know, in sort of our study is another way to think of aspirin exacerbated respiratory disease, those individuals who oftentimes we think of as like, oh yeah, these people have like more severe disease. Those individuals were having that diagnosis was significantly correlated with coming from more deprived neighborhoods. So again, you have perhaps another supporting data point that shows that disease severity, a component of that may again be impacted with this. And although nasal polyposis didn't quite make that, you know, sort of the classic cutoff of less than 0.05, the p-value was not too obvious, it was 0.07. And again, a lot of these studies that look at things like ADI, they often incorporate like thousands of patients. And so it was actually kind of impressive that we were able to demonstrate some of these relationships in a cohort that, yes, within rhinology is still pretty decently sized, but at the level of epidemiology studies, it's still relatively small. So I imagine as your sample size increases in future sort of multi-institutional investigations, some of these relationships will come out as even stronger.
Right. That's a great point. Were there any findings in the study that were surprising to you or that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, I think this goes, yes, there was. And I think it goes back to that second point that I made as a take home, which was that the level of improvement didn't seem to correlate with the neighborhood deprivation. So initially, what we had thought was that the post-operative period of time, it involves certain things that we classically think of as you need to do to continue to get sort of your maximal improvement. That sort of, you know, budesonide rinses have become a staple of our post-operative management. And our thought was, it's not always easy to get budesonide rinses, and budesonide can be more sort of expensive than just doing regular rinses or doing even like steroid nasal sprays. And so there was a thought that perhaps even with the management component, that individuals that were perhaps from more deprived areas wouldn't quite get to that same level of improvement. So I think it was a little bit surprising, but also sort of reassuring that even though when we get to them or they come to us, there may be some component of disease severity or baseline quality of life that's sort of more negatively affected from individuals from deprived neighborhoods, but still we can do something for them and get them that sort of improvement independent of sort of where they're coming from.
Yes, I'm particularly encouraged by that. And I think that this study to me, you know, is a very positive study in our literature. And I'm excited to, you know, that we can help to improve the lives of these patients from all walks of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think the results, that's one component, but the other component of it that I think sort of supports further investigation is trying to understand why there are differences in sort of baseline disease severity and baseline quality of life based on neighborhood, what neighborhood you're coming from. So there could be a lot of different components that go into this, right? So it could be access to care could potentially be one. For example, we noticed that people that were from more deprived neighborhoods tended to already have had a prior sinus surgery. So does that mean that for whatever reason, it took them sort of that next step, that next level to get to us? Or is it that people that are from sort of these deprived neighborhoods, their disease needs to be that much worse for their physician or for them to trigger like a investigation, like, hey, I need to get this treated, or I would like my symptoms to be evaluated. So trying to understand where that's coming from, I think those are some of the things in the future that I'm interested in looking at.
Yes, that's a great point. You've identified the significant findings in this study, and understanding the why is also important. So how does the practicing rhinologist, practicing otolaryngologist apply this work in their daily patient care?
So I think one sort of patient surgeon discussion point that we can take away as incorporating it into our practice is understanding that perhaps one doesn't need to try and tailor management based on some of these sociodemographic aspects. For example, if someone is coming from a more deprived neighborhood, it's still possible for them to get that same level of improvement with sort of our standard care treatment. And so I think just understanding that may help us at either subconscious or subconscious level to sort of be more confident that we are able to offer a lot of the same treatments, sort of, as you mentioned, to people from all walks of life.
Yes, I think maybe counseling, you know, the patients that, you know, they can expect improvement with medical or surgical management is incredibly important, regardless of perhaps where they're starting, where their baseline mm-hmm. is, or, you know, where they're living and working and that sort of thing. I think we do still have to, you know, keep in mind that some people may not be able to access certain mm-hmm. treatments, you know, for various reasons. And I think we have to be cognizant of that and, you know, still work to alleviate those burdens for patients as well. But absolutely. I think, you know, encouraging patients with regard to expectations and, you know, hopes for improvement is evident from this work. We talked a little bit about sort of future directions, but are there any additional studies that you all have planned or that you're already undertaking using this as a baseline for mm-hmm. future work?
Yeah. So I discussed a little bit about the sort of one trajectory that one could go down, which is understanding the reason why, what we're seeing some of these outcomes. And I think that requires sort of this continued prospective enrollment with some sort of semi-structured interview format to identify some of these themes. And so certainly that's an interest and something that I want to develop a little bit more. But in the meantime, when I think about sort of environmental exposures and to a degree, the socioeconomic status and social determinants of health are very intimately tied into those things that, you know, these sort of, even if you think about it from sort of the time that you're born to the time that, you know, we see them, like lifetime exposures, also known as the exposome idea. So your sort of cumulative lifetime environmental exposure risk. I think that within CRS, that's something that needs to be evaluated a little further. And that is also something I'm starting to look at. So we've published from the level of air quality in particulate matter. Right now we have a couple of projects looking at pollen exposure as well. So just trying to identify and maybe distill which one of these interacts with the other, or how do they come together to sort of impact our disease and our pathophysiology.
Fantastic. I'm excited about, like I said before, I'm excited about this paper. I'm excited about your future work and to see where this goes. And I'd like to thank you so much for joining me today, Amarbir, and also congratulations again to you and your team on this paper. I'd really like to encourage our listeners to get the manuscript and read it thoroughly. Do you have any last comments before we conclude?
I think that if you PubMed, Social Determinants of Health and Chronic Rhinosinusitis, and you were to compare it to like some of the, you know, some other chronic diseases that have a big quality of life impact, you would find that there's not a whole lot that's been published on it. So I just say, you know, this is an area that we need to continue to research. And if you have an interest in it, I'd encourage you to sort of pursue it further and certainly reach out to those that have started the work of trying to understand these relationships. And certainly, I'm always interested in chatting with people that have similar interests.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for the excellent discussion. And thank you, of course, to our Scope It Out listeners. This is Sarah Wise for Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'll sign off for now and see you next time.